You don't always think of Belfast as a city of music, but it is.
I was born by the river in a little tent. Oh, and just like the
there is the constant music of what happens, and a beat that seems almost to come from deep within some DNA of the city and its people.
Looks like coming, but I know a change's gonna come.
Close to the site where Bill Clinton famously played saxophone with the city's own Van Morrison in 1995, we meet busker Conor McGuinness with his blue guitar, as striking as his powerful blues voice.
Guy, I love music. It's just been all my life. My granddad was like a music teacher in CBS, Christian Brothers Secondary School. He was like, he taught even before I was born and all stuff. My two brothers played violin when I was younger. They were in the School of Music, so it's just I like just busking.
I go to the movies and I go down.
I love Sam Cooke.
Oh, yeah.
That's probably one of my favorite songs, Change Is Gonna Come. It's one of my favorite songs because it was Civil Rights.
Real song of optimism, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. It's been a long, long time coming, but I know the change gonna come.
You're listening to The County Measure. I'm Vincent Woods. We're making a journey around Ireland, 100 years after independence and partition, to get a measure, to get many measures of all 32 counties. We're looking at place, landscape, and the people who shape their lives within these boundaries of community and county. In this series, I'm hoping to get a fresh understanding of each county and its people as we shape a radio atlas of Ireland. There's a strong sense that real change has come to Belfast. It's now a UNESCO City of Music, the only city in Ireland and one of only three in the UK to be so honoured. And thanks to the vision and determination of one woman, you can now take a dedicated musical tour and hear and see the Lagan City as never before.
Dolores, how are you? Vincent.
Good, but I'm cold. I think you're more appropriately clad for the day than I am. It's like a lovely winter. I'm thinking, where's my scarf?
Dolores Fisher is the founder of Creative Tours Belfast and our enthusiastic guide. We meet her outside the Ulster Hall, the starting point for her Belfast music tour.
We're going to go on a short version of this music tour that you do.
Yes. The Belfast Music Walking Tour starts outside the Ulster Hall, but we start here because it's one of our favourite iconic music venues. It's a Victorian music hall, and it's a lot of musicians' favourite venue because of the acoustics of the hall. It has had all the greats down the years, including Snow Patrol, Led Zeppelin, the Rolling Stones, all sorts of people have played here.
So many a person crossed that threshold.
Oh, everybody's crossed that threshold, and first time that I went across it, which is giving away my age, was to see the Ramones. So I went to see lots of what the punk bands, because they were a bit, I don't know whether they were braver, but they still came during those troubled years. They probably thought it was cool to come, you see. So they came, and Rory Gallagher was the other regular visitor during that time.
And am I right in thinking that you took to the stage here as well, on one occasion at least?
Yes, oh goodness, that goes back to my punk days and my early enthusiasm,
early
and there
youth.
Wasn't the
yeah.
same health and security then, so the Stranglers were playing one day and we jumped up on stage and I did play the drums a little bit, and I said, oh, I can play the drums, to Jet Black, and he said, well, take over, I need to go to the bathroom, only not so politely as that. So off he went, and I thought, well, I better hop on here. So I played away to Peaches, Peaches by the Stranglers. I did my best, kept the basic time. And thank goodness I was relieved when he came back at the end of that song and jumped
on. He was
on.
Relieved and you were relieved.
Exactly. He was very well put, Bishop, indeed.
Strolling along, minding my own business. Well, there goes a girl and a half. She's got me going up and down. She's got me going.
North, will we move on towards City Hall?
So the next stop on the tour is City Hall. We're now in City Hall, which is, of course, a fine civic building built in 1888. And it opened in 1906.
I presume there would have been a bit of musical fanfare for the opening too.
I'm sorry, I'm not that old. I just can't claim to remember that. But the grounds itself, you can see it's got quite a lot of green open space. So there have actually been many an event in here in its own right every year. So one of those would be in November 1995 when President Bill Clinton first came to Belfast. And Van Morrison is probably our best known musician. So they invited Van Morrison to perform, and Bill Clinton eventually joined in on the saxophone. So that was always a very memorable moment.
But, you know, Morrison is that iconic music figure out of the city, and I suppose a lot of us grew up listening to his music and, in a way, learning something of the geography of Belfast and also the kind of emotional geography of the city as well. You know, through his lyrics and Cypress Avenue, Madame George, I mean, he really brought the city along.
He did. The Sleepy Hollow of Brown Eyed Girl, the school he went to, all named Bearsbridge Road, where he did his window cleaning round, the Donard Bells that strike, so we can map out the whole geography of the town.
Hey, where did we go? Days when the rains came down in the hollow, playing a new game, laughing.
On the tour, we talk about our musical heritage as well. So we talk about the movement of people into the town and the rural Irish bringing their traditional music. And of course, then we move to a church, First Presbyterian Church, and we explore the great movement of people from Scotland. 350,000 people were brought across from Scotland to this northern part of the island over the 1600s.
The Ulster Plantation.
And so they're, for the Plantation of Ulster, they are now known as the Ulster
people.
Scots.
Yes.
And their music and culture that they brought is still part of our culture and heritage to this day. So we're standing outside Kelly's Cellars. The focus of our attention at this stop is traditional music and folk singers. And this area would have been back really to the 1720s when it was a small tavern. Very much just an area where people came to come in and trade. It was a market area. And as they were waiting or having their lunch, they played their fiddle and sang. And so music has long been associated with this area. Even during the darkest days, during the years of conflict, you could still hear traditional music in Kelly's Cellars, and still this 4 nights a week at least. Then we would talk about a couple of our favourite singer-songwriters, and that's when I would outline my great love for Joshua Burnside and Danny Larkin, two great contemporary singer-songwriters who are doing both extremely well.
Forgive me, my friend. I know not my creed.
I really see why Belfast got that UNESCO designation.
Well,
totally deserving.
Because that's the point of the tour. I love sharing and showing people, telling them about the legends from our opera world or our classical world, our composers, from Conor Mitchell, who's premiering his new piece for orchestra this week, to
it's threaded right through
everybody.
Everything, isn't it?
It's everywhere, and they all help one another. Even the orchestra has got members of Problem Patterns and Stuart Bailey going along on Friday to speak about music as activism, because that's the theme of Conor Mitchell's new piece. But thanks for coming.
Great,
this
great,
really
to share it.
Hi, I'm Elena from Problem Patterns. We wrote a song for the County Measure called I Think You Should Leave, and it's about the importance of building community here in Belfast, County Antrim.
Belfast, a city, it's complicated. It's the very place where I was created. But we
You're listening to The County Measure, and we're in County Antrim. According to a road sign, we're now entering the Antrim coastal and glens area of outstanding beauty, heading for Cushendal, but actually it feels like we've been in one of the glens area of beauty for a while. Martinstown behind us, this great sweep of countryside. You get a sense of the vastness of these. I mean, 9 glens of Antrim, and I suspect you could spend half a lifetime exploring them and never fully know them. Lovely forest, native woodland on our right, and great sense of old land settlement, a kind of serenity here. I mean, it's a very beautiful landscape. Hurling is strong in pockets of Antrim, and in Cushendal on the beautiful Causeway coast, you can't miss a vivid painting on the gable of the Lurig Inn pub by the bridge over the Dal River. It shows players from the local hurling team entering the pitch with one enthusiastic supporter, John MacKillop, marching proudly in front and grinning at the viewer.
Hello there, how are you doing? Good, good, good.
Admiring our mural.
Isn't it beautiful? Ah, it's beautiful. It's great.
Beside the mural, I meet Terence McNaughton, owner of the pub and friend of John.
John was special needs, but he was with our hurling team all through. He just died last year, a year now next month. I put that mural up for him.
Great, yes, it did.
We call him the main man. That there is County Final, and they're marching behind the band.
2016,
and,
is it?
Yeah, and John's marching along with the band, as he always did, taking centre of attention, but all the players have got game face on. They're going to go to battle now, and John knows he's in the limelight, so he's hugging the limelight. But if you knew John, John was full of fun. And
did you grow up here?
Born and raised here, yep. Good village to grow up in.
Yeah. Yeah. And is the club still doing well? Is the hurling still strong?
We're Ulster champions at the minute.
Are you Ulster champions?
Yeah, we're county champions. The area you're in now, 15 miles either way, is the most strongest part of the game of hurling in Ulster. Like, we hold the record for Ulster titles. There'll be more Ulster titles in this area than would be in the rest of the whole of Ulster. Like, it's a, for some unknown reason, there's a real passion about the game of hurling here. We don't play rugby, don't play soccer, don't play football. It's just, hurling's our thing, like.
Just caught here in its day.
Yeah, I don't know why. Maybe it's because Scotland's only 9 miles away, and the west coast of Scotland was big into shinty, and back in the day it was easier to travel to Scotland than it was to go here. Actually, from where you're standing, the closest supermarket or Tesco's is actually in Scotland. You know, it's 18 mile in Ballymena and it's 12 mile that way or something.
It's harder to get to.
Which is a strange fact. Yeah. Well, anyway, have a good day.
Thanks a million.
Cheers.
Good luck.
A little way up the coast from Cushendal is Cushendun, a beautiful harbour town with a unique architectural history.
A Cornish-style village built on the coast in County Antrim, looking across at the Mull of Kintyre. Very, very beautiful spot. Designed by a famous Welsh architect for the first and last Lord Cushendun, Ronald McNeill, who was known to his political opponents as Lord Crush-em-down, and a formidable man he was, an MP for the area.
Cushendun Harbour is just a stroll from the main street, and its pristine whitewashed houses with their distinctive low shingle roofs and small paned windows.
Hello. Are you lost in contemplation?
No, I'm just thinking, just quiet.
Beautiful spot.
It is.
What are you doing?
Just measuring the tide today. Particularly big tide today, particularly later on this afternoon. It's coming right down. So one of the lowest tides of the year today.
Really? And is that because of the time of the year?
Partly.
Okay.
Yes, partly, yes. When we had the solar eclipse, do you remember about 2 weeks ago?
There
was
yeah. another,
that was officially the lowest okay. it can possibly be. But this is almost the same today. Oh, so, okay. And also the highest, almost. Oh, so yes. We're organising a monitoring scheme for the bay because they're concerned about how the sand dunes are gradually eroding away. So see what's happening at the very top end. The seawall's gradually falling away and they're worried about the road to the houses at the far end. So, yeah. so we're measuring this. But this measures to within a couple of millimetres.
Fantastic.
So we're going to measure that over the next year and see... And see how whether the wall is gradually moving or this is a GPS, just a very accurate GPS.
My name is Jan Carson. I'm a writer based in East Belfast, but I had the great pleasure of growing up in Ballymena in County Antrim. And this is a little piece about my grandfather. My granda specialised in fabrication, which is to say, he told great fibs and also kept a furniture showroom on the outskirts of Clough Mills, reupholstering Chesterfield suites in a drafty warehouse out the back. Before I was old enough for school and sometimes during holidays, Granda took me into work. I wasn't great at shifting sofas and mostly done colouring in, or hid in wardrobes, under beds and tables, counting to 10 before finding myself. Solitary hide and seek soon lost its appeal, so Granda got a monkey to keep me occupied. The monkey lived in the showroom. His name was Monkey. He was brown. He ate nuts and naughty wains. I assume he had a tail. I spent much of my childhood chasing Monkey around the showroom and never once clapped eyes on him. Though there was always some grown-up who'd just seen him ducking behind a bureau or eating peanuts off a buffet. Age 7, I began questioning the existence of certain entities. Santa, dinosaurs, God, etc. School was making me cynical. I asked my granda where he'd found a monkey in 1980s Ulster. The troubles were on. We didn't have fancy things like McDonald's or monkeys. Some idiot would only try to blow them up. Granda didn't hesitate. He came from the Causeway Safari Park. Wee rascal snuck out in my riffrack. I must have looked sceptical. It was on the news, Granda continued. Animals are always escaping from that place. I've a friend in Ballybuggy whose cat got eaten by one of their panthers. He won't let his wains play outside now. I was familiar with Safari Park. We'd stopped there on our Sunday school trip en route to paddle at the White Rocks. We drove past dozy lions, camels and a zebra who was either asleep or dead. I saw a chimp smoking a cigarette somebody had tossed from a car window. The animals looked wrong in the drizzle, like they were dreaming of sunnier spots. My father, who was a sensible man, asked, "Who opens a safari park in a field in County Antrim in the middle of the Troubles?" My Uncle Alan replied, "Fair play to them, they're making a fortune. Easter Monday, the queues were all the way back to Ballymoney. They left it that much money they'd to store it in the lion's cage for fear the paramilitaries might come visiting." The safari park felt like a made-up place to me. It wasn't hard to imagine Monkey clinging to the roof of Granda's two-tone cortina as he sped home down the Coleraine line. I continued to search for Monkey all the way up to age 10 or 11. Aged 44, I sometimes still believe. This neck of the woods was made for fiction. It's story haunted, larger than life, frequently verging on the absurd. And I cannot get enough of it.
You
You're listening to The County Measure. Here in Ballycastle Harbour, a very striking monument and plaque to Marconi, marking that moment in 1898 when Marconi and his assistant George Kemp, as it says here, established wireless communication with Rathlin Island to report to Lloyd's station at Torhead on ships passing along the north coast of the island. So this moment of telecommunications history remembered here in Ballycastle, connected to Rathlin, connected to the world. At Ballycastle, you take the ferry to Rathlin Island. Population 150, and the most northerly point in Antrim.
You have the perfect day for it too.
The trip is a short half hour.
Coming in the harbour at Rathlin Seal on the rock there.
The island is rich in wildlife. Puffins, seals, guillemots and more. It's also home to the rare golden hare, a genetic variation of the Irish hare with gold-coloured fur and distinctive blue eyes. On the pier, we meet Tom O'Donnell, a self-taught photographer who came here 18 years ago to photograph wildlife and stayed.
Tom,
how are you doing?
I said to myself,
they didn't. Unreliable lot.
We hop into the community electric car to go for a journey around the island.
These fields here, I mean, early in the morning, you would might see the odd hare knocking about these fields, you know. But I always patrol up and down and have a nosy and go up the lanes and go off-road and go walking and bringing the binoculars with me just to make sure I don't miss out on anything. To our left here is the reed bed, Craig McCagan Lock. There's lots of breeding birds in there, breeding ducks, moorhen, coot, you know, tufted duck. You get your reed warblers and stuff in them. We're down now overlooking Ushant Port. This is the wee port here, with these two old buildings. This is where the seals all come then, during peak summer. And in fact, there's some down there at the minute, just on the left. Just behind the house. You see the old building there? Yeah, sitting on that side. So this is a great place. I would come down here and sit in them rocks and be really close to the seals and let them do their thing. And they would be sparring in the water and all the rest of it. It's good fun to watch and photograph. And I have photographed the golden hare in this area, but they obviously move. So I would have to walk these hills and fields and stuff to try and see if there are any about.
Tom, okay. the golden hare, I suppose, you know, it's such a beautiful concept. How would you describe it?
Well, a golden hare is an Irish hare. It's got a slightly different genetic form. It ends up with these blue eyes and a very light-coloured coat. It has no black tips on the ears, which most hares have. I think nearly every hare in the world has black tips, except for this golden one, which makes it quite unique. People have called it leucism, like leucistic. So it's almost a form of albinoism, but it's not right over to the albino side, as in turning white with pink eyes. It's got blue eyes and very light-coloured coat. And if people say to me, I think I've seen a golden hare, you don't think you've seen one. You've seen one or you haven't seen one, because they're so distinctive, you know. I mean, at a recent encounter, there was a golden hare amongst the, it must have been five or six, just ordinary coloured hares. And they get spooked and run away. And I just snook in, threw my camo over, sat down. And it was a bit backbreaking, like, because I sat in the wrong place. So I was hunched over. But eventually they came back. And then when they did come back and started running towards me and I got some nice pictures, I couldn't move because they still hung about. And they wouldn't move. They wouldn't move away again. So I didn't want to move to spook them. And I must have sat there for 3.5 hours. And my back was broke after that. That was hard going. Yeah.
And Tom, your camera has brought you to many different parts of the world.
Yeah, it has.
Where have you been?
I've been to Northern Alaska photographing polar bears right on the Arctic Ocean. I've been to Antarctica and South Georgia photographing penguins. Finland, northeast Finland on the Russian border, to photograph wolverine and brown bear, European brown bear. Sweden for Golden Eagles. Just when I think back on it, I think, did I really do that? You know,
but then wonderful. Yeah.
How did you start with the photography?
Well, it's a bit of a sad story, to be honest with you. My brother died when he was 19, and there wasn't a proper memory card. You know, the photo, but back in them days, that was 1982. My mother was the chief photographer in the house, who cuts people's heads off, you know, in every photograph. So so there wasn't really a good photograph. So we had to get
the
memorial card. And that always stuck with my mind. And then it was after that that I decided I'm buying a camera. And then I joined the camera club. Basically self-taught, like, you know.
But then wonderful, yeah.
And it's also wonderful to think that your instinct to begin photography started with the loss of your brother.
Yeah.
But somehow that has brought you on this journey.
Yes.
To many different parts of the world.
That's the seals howling, if you can hear them there. Hear them there. So I think that's where the myth of the banshees called comes from, Unrathlin. Because at night in the winter in the harbour, you can hear the seals howling and it echoes all over the harbour. So you can understand why the older generation thought the banshees crying here, you know.
Tom, what is it, do you think, about the hares that make them so special for you?
The hare's a mythical creature and it goes down in a lot of folklore, Irish folklore, I think. But for me, I think when I got a close encounter, my first close encounter with a golden hare many years ago, I became almost obsessed with them. And now when I'm out in the field trying to photograph them, you can see all their distinctive features. They're not all the same. They've got certain shapes of mouths, and I'm actually looking at them and starting to name them because that comical look in some of them, you know, and then maybe one will have a little cut out of his ear, or one will have something, one ear hanging down and stuff like that. So they're all different. I mean, a lot of people who don't see that think they're all exactly the same, but they're totally different and they are characters. And you can see some of them are feisty and some of them are quiet, and it's just great to watch them, to be honest. Sometimes I don't even take photos of them. I just watch and look and listen, and it's good fun.
Yeah.
Standing at this spectacular lookout point at Mara Cross, Dunluce, looking over at Port Rush. Splendid clifftop walks. And now again, this is the intermittent sound of motorbikes, because this is, of course, on the route of the Northwest 200 International Motorbike Race. It's been going since, I think, 1929, and it's on this triangle, kind of a street race, really, I suppose, between Port Stewart, Coleraine, and Port Rush, brings a huge number of visitors to this area, about 115,000, I think, each year. Amazing speeds on it as well, but an average speed of about 120 miles per hour. So our journeys here in this area have been punctuated by the sound of motorbikes and people passing us at high speed, but there's a certain zest. Ballycastle is one of the Antrim towns immortalised in song, the Auld Lammas Fair part of the radio songscape of my youth. This quiet coastal town balances the demands of tourism, economic and social change, and urban dereliction. The town gets many visitors from Belfast, and I meet one of them on the seafront walk so popular with locals and visitors alike.
Vincent,
Paddy Raff made his name as a comedian during lockdown, creating and performing character-led sketches on YouTube before he got his own very popular show on television. Paddy Raff, is there do you think, is there a particular kind of antrim humour?
Oh no, I don't think so. What time does this go out at? So you can give me a few jokes. I think that the northern humour is it's kind of becoming, you know, it used to be cultures versus townies, you know, that kind of thing. So maybe that's what it is. Yeah, there's a bit of both, because you do get that in Antrim. You've got Belfast, and then literally you travel out to, you know, the likes of here, and it feels like you're in a different world.
Tell me about two of the characters that you've come up with, Father Pat
okay.
and Nigel.
Yes. So they're kind of come up organically. I didn't set out to be like a character comedian. The Father Pat one came because my son had a Bluetooth microphone that had this really weird feedback on it, but it reminded me of Cemetery Sunday. So we would go to Cemetery Sunday, and there'd be these really loud speakers that give you this mad echo effect. And as I was talking in, it was like, oh, that really sounds like the priest of Cemetery Sunday. And there just happened to be like rave music on that I was listening to. So I started singing a mashup of like Through Him, With Him, In Him, you know, over I think it was like DJ Sash or something. So that was where that came about. People loved that.
Gene's request is for Sweetheart of Jesus. Of course you can have that, Gene.
Let us proclaim the mysteries of faith. Sweetheart of Jesus.
And then Nigel would be, yeah, the kind of character that's like the posh BT9, or we would call it D4, would be the Dublin equivalent, you know, sort of the D4 ones. But yeah, BT9 up here. And again, that came natural. That was sort of Snapchat. Used to have different wee filters, and that's what it looked like. I thought that sounds like it would be a posh guy, you know. So they kind of came organically, and now they're kind of, they're things that people ask for at the shows and after shows. I do a bit of Nigel live.
Hi Drew, Nigel here. I'm a little bit overhung today. We had a bit of an Après Crimbo get-together at mine last night, myself and the Bravo Tango Niners. It was just pre-drinks before we headed in and painted the cathedral quarter rouge, but I played a bit of a prank on them. It was pretty amazing. Would you hear what I did? So I told the help to keep the drinks coming, and we were sitting for a while.
But you were in a wedding band before you,
yes.
You took the comedy full-time.
The wedding band is like, it's like a dirty word for actual musicians, because we're up there playing other people's songs and getting paid better than people who make songs and trying to make it on the scenes.
Actually, inevitably at a wedding you see really funny things.
Oh yeah. One of the things I used to do was I did this whole sort of TED talk in my set about how to stack a perfect buffet. And what you need to do is, triangular sandwiches are the common denominator of all buffets, right? They're always there. No matter what else, there will always be triangular sandwiches. So if you line your sandwiches around the edge of the plate with the crust facing in, you can put the point over the edge. So you're using the negative space around the plate to stack. And then in the middle, you can heap stuff onto it, because we're great at building bonfires up here. So I think it comes from that. And you can stack stuff. And there's like a retaining wall of crust, you know, so you eat what's in the middle, and then you've still got the sandwiches. And I've calculated it's about 300% more you can get onto your plate if you start with a bread wall around the outside. So I'm actually going to patent that.
I think it's a great, you're onto a winner with that.
So that was 1,000. We did I calculated over 1,000 weddings. You say wedding receptions, we used to call them divorce pre-drinks, with the amount of repeat bookings we used to get. More than you'd think.
But post-prenup. Paddy, it's so nice to meet you.
You too?
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
Corner of Wellington Street, Church Street, Ballymoney Street here in Ballymena Town Centre, and there's a fine new covered area for people to sit, and many are sitting and enjoying a little bit of a rest, but it's also a designated new busking spot for the town. But as of now, nobody singing, nobody playing, no buskers, but maybe we'll catch someone later. Ballymena, the middle town land on the Braid River, was the childhood home of Ian Paisley and Liam Neeson, an unlikely pairing, but that's life in a town that was once considered the heart of loyalism and a deeply conservative Presbyterian identity. The town is different today. Cafes busy, a few tables out on the street, and here I put chat on a man I take to be a biker.
Oh, I rode every day, 365 days a year for 37 years. I'd only passed my driving test in the car there 10 years ago, and I'm 64 now.
That's good going.
Yeah. Oh, I had to get a car. My daughter took cancer, so she did, and just turned 16 there. this month.
Oh, fantastic.
So does.
So she's through it.
She's the third child in the world to survive. That is the worst form of leukemia, the worst form of bacterial meningitis at the same time, and also the second time she relapsed, contracted the hospital disease C. diff, and survived it as well.
Oh.
Joy is what they call the walking miracle. She came out of hospital blind and paralysed, and then within 2 years walking, talking and seeing, but the cancer cells got into her eyes the second time, 16 days of radiotherapy in both eyes, and they told her she'll go blind within 5 or 6 years again. Why? Radiotherapy gives you cataracts. With the brain damage, she's special needs and learning difficulties. But you know what the brain damage did there? Oh my God. She's almost got a photographic memory. She remembers everything, word for word. She's memorized hundreds of movies. An old TV series from 1969, Cat Weasel. Joy's memorized all 26 episodes, word for word. And every song, she's music mad. We were at the Bluegrass Festival there up at Doma, and she bought 5 new CDs. And she's learned every song of all the CDs she has. And one of her favourite groups now is Deep Purple.
And what's your own name?
Julian.
Julian
Carl.
Julian
Quigley.
Carl.
Vincent My mother Woods. Named me after Julius Caesar. But this was JC because I was born in the Ides of March. So I'm Julian Carl Quigley. JC.
Well named too, I think, more than Joy. I think Julius. Yeah,
Julian Joy, is oh, Joy is a joy when she's in a good form.
You're listening to The County Measure, and we're in County Antrim.
Here at Carnlough Harbour, lovely, serene and busy spot.
A beautiful sunny day in the charming seaside town of Carnlough.
Several boats, the Ella B homeward bound.
Further over on the quay, we meet Davy Smith, whose family have worked on and around the water here for generations.
Davy, how are you doing?
No bad.
Vincent Woods, how are you?
No bad at all.
Keith, over here.
Davy owns an old boat, the Flora, destined now to be scrapped, but whose story deserves to be remembered.
Jeez, I'm going to cut her up now, so am I, shortly. I'm going to cut her up. She's built in the village here in 1923, so she's 100 years old this year, so she is. She was named after Flora MacDonald in Glenarm, you know, the castle. But he used to fish a salmon net just here at the back of the harbour here for Lord Antrim. But Flora MacDonald come and stayed with the Neils in the castle, and she took a great love for the fishing, and she came out to Carnlough every day and went out and looked the salmon net with Dick Wilson. And they went and hauled a few pots, you know, lobster pots, and it ended up they fell in love. And then once the castle heard that they were having a relationship, they shipped her off to America to kind of, he was only a commoner as such, you know, at that time, you know. So Dick was heartbroken. So he started to build this boat here, as he did. So once he got her built, he went up to Derry and got onto a steamer to head to America to try and find Flora. To bring her back and say that, you know, you're going to go fishing the rest of your life, kind of thing. He built the boat to win her heart back, you know. But when he went to America, it took him 2 years, I think it was, to find her. You know, he's worked on the power lines for a good while, and then he found her. I think it was Detroit, maybe he found her in. But she'd already got married. So he came home broken hearted. And she wasn't named at that time, but when he did come home, he wrote Flora in the stern of her and he launched her. But that's kind of the gist of that story of her, you know. It's a shame to cut her up, but listen, I'm not allowed to, you're not allowed to catch fish anymore, so what do you do with her, you know?
Yeah. Well, I suppose she'd rot away anyway. And,
aye, well, yeah. She's kind of rotten as it is, you know. She's been out of the water 5 or 6 years, you know, had a good fish away.
It's a bit of a shock to find a tank and a gun carriage as part of a war memorial, but here it is, this memorial along the seafront in Carrickfergus. The tank is vaguely pointing in the direction of the Norman castle and the sea, and in a sense the atmosphere almost tallies with signs for the first East Antrim UVF, and signs proclaiming that there would be people to defend Ulster against all foes. And you think back to McNeice's poem Carrickfergus, where he talks about the Scotch quarter was a line of residential houses, but the Irish quarter was a slum for the blind and halt. The poet Louis McNeice spent much of his childhood in Carrickfergus, capturing the history, atmosphere and divisions of the town. Years ago, a friend told me he couldn't find a single McNeice book in the poet's hometown. But that's all changed. Carrickfergus now has a delightful bookshop, founded by writer Jo Zebedee and her husband, Chris. Jo Zebedee, tell me about starting the secret bookshop here.
So one of the things that we both believe quite passionately is that we have almost centralised culture. We've sort of said that you go to the big city now to go to the bookshops, to go to the theatres, and that we've lost the small cultural spaces in our own communities. So that was what drove us to open in our own community rather than...
Because I think you also have this idea that if you want to have creative spaces, you have to work at it and you have to place the creative spaces within the community.
Yeah, and Carrick is a town. We don't have a theatre space. We have a town hall that enables shows and whatnot, but there's not actually a theatre. You know, we have a very good library, which is great, and they do a lot. I'm also a writer, so, you know, we do little writing courses, we do little space to writes, and then we do a book group. So there's all sorts of little pockets of activity going on there. And then we felt that once you start one thing, the next thing happens, and then it all just sort of rolls together. And then we recently were awarded the Irish Bookstore of the Year. And honestly, the social media and the people dropping in. And Chris says we don't need to buy a bottle bag for the next 10 years because we had so many bottles of fizz. And just the whole sense of this is really good for Carrick. And
That's an extraordinary achievement.
Yeah, no, it was brilliant.
Within 5 years, and effectively two of those years shut down.
Yeah, yeah.
How did you do it?
We have no idea. It's been way more than we expected. We expected it to be quite a sleepy little retirement project, and it's not. But we love it, so we do.
And I suspect you love Carrickfergus as well.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's so much going for the town, the sea. I just love the sea. I couldn't live anywhere that isn't by the sea. Like anybody in Ireland, your roots are your roots, aren't they?
Antrim Boat Club have very kindly agreed to take us out on Loch Ness. Shimmering glimpses of Loch Ness, the largest lake in Ireland, can be seen from heights around Antrim town. Its unique ecosystem nurtures rich animal and plant life and has provided sustenance for generations of eel fishermen.
My name's Alan Riley, and we're going out around the old Second World War platform, which is set out here. It belonged to the torpedo factory up the river, and it was a firing head for testing the torpedoes. And since, well, forever, I can remember birds have bred on it. Terns and black-headed gulls.
Alarm bells sounded last summer when a blanket of blue-green algae appeared on the lake's surface, evidence of serious ecological breakdown.
There's your first tern. They're a graceful bird, aren't they?
Many people are working to protect the lake's natural resources and future, and we meet two of them on a boat trip from Antrim Yacht Club with skipper Alan Riley.
My name's Peter Harper, and I'm a shoreline environment officer. What you've got here is a breeding colony of black-headed gulls. It's also important for common terns. So the common terns in particular, they come a long distance to breed in Loch Ness. They basically come to Loch Ness to have their babies from Senegal, Ghana. It's a long distance that they travel. The fortunate thing this year is that numbers seem to be down. Could be a number of reasons for that. One thing which has affected all the bird sites in Ireland is avian flu. So we think we may have lost a few birds through that.
My name is Michael Brown. I work for the Lochney Partnership, and I'm the Lochney Heritage Plan Coordinator.
And it's an extraordinary lake in that it provides, I think, is it about 40% of the water, drinking water to Belfast, and about 40 to all the counties of the north, the six counties, and a bit to Monaghan as well. Yes. And so it's this absolutely invaluable resource.
It's an incredibly invaluable resource. And more than what we get out of it, what comes into it is incredible too. That if you were to look at the river catchment that comes into Lochney, there's somewhere in the region of 10,000 kilometres of waterway within the catchment, some of which comes out of County Monaghan as well. So it is, it's a very important resource for Northern Ireland.
Last summer I saw a lot of publicity about pollution on the lake, this blue and green algae that appeared. Is it that perfect storm of climate change, invasive species and pollution that's really hitting the lake?
It sort of is. Sort of Loch May is almost a measurement of how we treat our environment. It could apply to any big loch in Ireland. And basically, you know, at the bottom line, it's about how we do our agriculture. It's a very intensive agricultural region. We produce, I think, enough food to feed 12.5 million people from around the loch. So there's a huge concentration of poultry farms in the southwest corner of the loch. We have a huge head of cattle, and we have a massive pig industry, both in Northern Ireland and in the border counties. So for every action, there is a reaction, and I'm afraid it has ended up in Loch Ney. It's been a long time forming, and it will be a very long time to fix. The other element is invasive species. That is a bag of invasive species. That's a bag of zebra mussels. And I'm afraid there are millions and millions of zebra mussels within
tiny, these tiny mussels that look quite innocuous but are not. I mean, what impact do they have on the water?
Well, they do a number of things. They filter the water and they clear the water. It sounds good, but it's maybe not, because when the water's clearer, the sun can penetrate deeper into the water. There's more photosynthesis. There's always algae in any lake. But because the water's clearer, the growth is much quicker within the loch. The other thing they do is they compete for food with the larvae of the famous Loch Ney fly. When there's less flies, there's less food for all the fish within the loch, roach, perch, dullahan. So it's all interconnected. It's one big ecosystem. And it's back to what I said, when something changes, something then changes further down the line in response to that.
And of course, there's an extra complication, and you know, I don't want to get into the politics of this, but the soil and I think the bed of the lake are owned by the Earl of Shaftesbury.
Correct. Yes, the bed and the soil is owned by the Earl of Shaftesbury. And whilst it is and it isn't a problem, it seems to have been a problem for years. And to give you an example, during the Good Friday Agreement, whenever the All-Ireland bodies all sort of got together, this was the only body of water that they didn't consider. And nobody really knows the reason why, but we think it was because of the private ownership. Hopefully that may change, and if it does change, then that should make it easier for us to look at then various different management bodies thereafter. Sorry, we're getting a wee bit close to the shore here.
First county in Ireland by alphabetical order, the county closest to Scotland, the most loyal to the union with the UK, and the second most densely populated county after Dublin. Home to most of Belfast and site to some of the most spectacular coastal scenery in the world. Antrim is more than the sum of all or any statistics that might be mustered. There's a lot of new music to be made yet.
The County Measure with Vincent Woods is part of our decade of centenary celebrations here on RT Radio 1. The programme was produced by Colette Kinsella and the researcher was Simon O'Gallagher. For any suggestions for the series on your county, email county@rte.ie.